When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Unequal Sequel
Extra.
This is it. This is the first extra episode of February. We've made it through January. Thank God for that. That was a long year, wasn't it? It seemed like that month. It was a long one. We're crashing into February quite hard.
February just feels a bit like January 2. It's like the sequel to January.
Yeah. But in February, you have like Pancake Day and Valentine's Day. And their Pancake Day this year in the UK is the 13th. And obviously Valentine's Day is on the 14th.
Because Pancake Day moves every year, doesn't it?
I don't understand the gimmick of Pancake Day and why it moves. Is it anything to do with Jesus?
It's to do with Easter, isn't it? So it's the day before Lent starts. And so you eat up all your eggs and flour and milk and stuff because you're supposed to fast during Lent.
Oh, so Jesus never had a pancake?
No. And he never had an Easter egg either.
I mean, he would have loved an Easter egg.
I bet he would, yeah. He'd have been all over an Easter egg.
So when's Easter then? That's the end of the month, isn't it?
April, I think, isn't it?
Hang on. So how comes...
So first week of April, Easter.
So what's Pancake Day got to do with Easter?
Because you're supposed to... Okay, so... Oh, God. I'm not a Christian. This is hard to answer. I'm going off of, like, middle school knowledge right now. But as far as I understand it, you're supposed to fast from Lent until Easter.
Right.
So Pancake Day is the day before Lent. So you eat up all the good food on Pancake Day, then you're not supposed to eat until Easter. So you fast until Easter.
Or who makes those dates
in
up?
In reality, it's like, well, it's all to base with the moon and the lunar cycle.
Moon?
Yeah, that's why Easter moves, isn't it? It's like something to do with some sort of thing with, I don't know, with the lunar calendar. That's why Easter's never on the same
hooky
time.
Trippy to me, Rich. Yeah. This sounds like you're making it up.
It sounds like it's making up because it's religion and it's all made up.
Oh, okay. Hello, welcome to February.
This isn't what you were expecting, was it?
Do you feel like we're filling a little bit? Anyway, we are into February, and we all know that February and January are very quiet for releases for sequels.
They're very quiet.
So we always have to go hunting around. So Rich found something for this month, and it was exciting. I thought, let's go with that, Rich. So if you want to fill the audience in what we're doing.
So we thought we would dig deeper than we've ever done back into sequel archives, and we found a movie that's 35 years old this month.
35 years old. A sequel that's 35 years old.
I mean, there is a caveat to that. It was released on the 10th of February, 1989, in the United States. But because back in the 80s, we were months and months behind the United States, it didn't come out in the UK until September.
Wow. That's a pause, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it used to be normal, didn't it? It used to be at least 6 months between America and UK releases.
It wasn't really a problem because spoilers were harder to come by back in those days because obviously the internet on mobile phones wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
But 35 years ago, The Fly 2...
I was going to say, still haven't said what movie it is.
Oh, yeah. The Fly 2, the sequel to David Cronenberg's classic and quite truly horrifying film, The Fly, starring Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum. Yeah.
Jeff. It's like, I've forgotten his first name, really. Which is a cracking film from 1986.
Which
truly,
I watched far too young.
Me too.
Yeah, I think I was about 10.
I think I was about 11, and the bit when he pukes up on the guy's arms and legs has lived with me.
Oh, yes.
And I don't think I've ever rewatched it.
Oh, really?
After that, because it was so traumatizing.
I have rewatched it a couple of times because I find it quite... I know I'm not into a horror movie, but I find The Fly quite fun. Like, you know?
Well, Goldblum really pumps his acting into that film.
He does, yeah.
It's built for him, to be honest. Mm. And Cronenberg, like that body horror shocking thing. Also, for David Cronenberg, it feels kind of like a blockbustery film, weirdly, compared to some of his other films.
Yeah.
It feels like a...
I think it was a bit of a B movie. I don't think it was...
Isn't it a remake of an original film? Isn't there an original?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised.
So he's remade that. So lots of people put it in their like greatest ever remakes. I'm like, come on.
Okay.
From like 1912 or something stupid like that. Anyway, The Fly 2 picks up, 3 years later in 1989. Lots of people didn't want to come back for it. Not even Gina Davis.
No.
they recast her for a woman that's 10 years younger than Gina Davis in the birth scene at the beginning. Anyway, I'm going to do the synopsis and then we can really crack into it. So here's the synopsis of the Fly 2.
Oh, are you doing the synopsis today?
Oh, do you know what? I've got it in front of me.
Go for it. Yeah, yeah. Normally you make me and do the synopsis.
The almost human son of Blundlefly searches for a cure to his mutated genes while being monitored by a nefarious corporation that wishes to continue his father's experiments. Do you want to add anything onto that?
I mean, it's Brundlefly, not Blundlefly.
Martin Brundle. Right?
So Eric Stoltz's character in this is called Martin Brundle. So it's an interesting biopic of the early years of former Formula One driver Martin Brundle.
Oh, yeah.
And would explain why he doesn't seem to age.
True. It's directed someone called Chris Wallace. Never heard of him.
He was the visual effects supervisor on The Fly and Gremlins.
Okay.
So he's mostly known for special effects, essentially.
Well, brilliant job, because The Fly is,
incredible.
Well ahead of its time.
Incredible special effects. So yeah, like I say, like those kind of 80s kind of times, like The Fly and Gremlins, he did Hot Shots, lots of different kind of movies. He worked on, there was a creature designer on Return of the Jedi, you know, lots of that kind of high level stuff, but didn't, in terms of directing.
Is this his first film?
This is his first film. And
okay.
I think his only film, his only kind of like feature. So he's done a short and he's done a Gremlins kind of documentary thing.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, good for him.
Yeah. Yeah, good for him.
So I think we've just spoiled that. We've both seen The Fly a long time ago,
yes,
and we shouldn't have watched it when we were 10 or 11.
Far too young.
I feel
that's
not lots of people's experiences with The Fly.
Mm. It was one of those ones that went around the playground, I think. People going, oh my God, have you seen this? They tell you wild stories about things that happen, and you watch it and you're like, it's a little tamer than I imagined.
Me and my friends went for a period of doing the movies.
Okay.
So The Thing,
yeah.
The Blob, and The Fly seemed like the trilogy.
Okay. Okay.
I remember watching those when I was 10 or 11.
Mm.
And like I said, really scared me, really shook me up, because the prosthetics are
especially
really
good.
Especially for an 11 or 12-year-old, really scary.
Definitely puts you off ordering a kebab for the next 100 years, right?
When he starts eating the food, or his fingernails start coming off, and he just... Goldblum is so perfect with just the licking the lips and his eyes and his movements.
Yeah.
And it's truly disturbing.
Yes. And I think that's a big difference between the first one and the second one.
Well, what is this the first time you've ever watched The Fly 2?
It is.
It's my first time.
It's the first time I watched it, yeah.
Why have you not think we've not gone to see The Fly 2?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I mean, 1989 was a good year for movies. There's some strong movies out that year. It had a lot of competition. But also, I think, I don't know, maybe it just doesn't have the shock value of the first one. You know, so people weren't talking about it. Because it wasn't like... movie marketing was really a big thing when I was eight, like when this came out. So,
well, 1989, I was four. So,
yeah, so you wouldn't have watched it when it came out, kind of thing.
Absolutely not. But so, I didn't watch the other one until like 97, 98, the first time.
True. But then I don't know. I don't know. You know, sequels to that kind of movie weren't a big thing. They tended to be really low quality and not worth watching, I think.
Well, yeah, you had to hunt out VHS. And if you're like your dad or your uncle or like family friends don't have it, then you didn't watch it because you weren't going to catch it on TV because you weren't allowed to stay up.
There's no way you'd watch it on TV.
Imagine walking in, your mum's found out you're watching The Fly. She would have gone ballistic. Mm.
And it was that kind of... that kind of time when if it was on TV, they'd have cut out all the good bits anyway.
Well, that would have been a weird film to watch.
A weird film.
If they cut all the good bits out of this film.
Basically cut out the last half an hour.
Or even the beginning, to be honest.
Yeah, true. Yeah, yeah.
So this is the first time, and I think I've always been really... you know, the other day we found out there's an RIPD2.
Mm, yeah.
And you're like, I don't want to ever touch that. Kind of thing. I think like The Fly 2 feels like one of those sequels that you didn't really know existed.
No, a bit like Psycho 2.
Yes,
you know, when that
or
came
even
up.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Yeah when they
I would put it in the same brackets as those sequels.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, ones that you didn't think needed to exist.
But here we are, 35 years later, watching this sequel. Yeah, like I said, so the storyline, I think, is pretty good. There's the son. I think you knew that she was pregnant at the end of the first film. I'll have to...
Yeah, I think so. That seems to be in my brain. So, yeah, I seem to think... Because she kills him at the end, doesn't she? She kills the fly. Yeah. But then, yeah, she's pregnant at that point, I think. And I think you know that.
So this is like 9 months, or even, is it say 5 months later?
Yeah, because also it's accelerate, the kid grows at accelerated rate, so...
Which turns this film into like a little bit of a big movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've got some things to talk about with that.
he's a fully adult by the age of five.
Yes, yeah, so...
The spoiler
he's the size of an eight-year-old when he's 11 months old, you know, that kind of, yeah.
So it starts straight away of... I still want to call her Gina Davis, but it's not Gina Davis.
No, I'm not sure who it is.
Saffron Henderson is the actress, I believe, playing Veronica.
You barely see her, to be honest. I don't like...
Barely see her. She's given birth to this cocoon pod thing.
Yeah.
And what made it really traumatic for me is her shouting, "You promised me it wasn't going to be like this." Mm. We've got the evil scientist, Bartok, whatever his name
Anton
is.
Anton Bartok.
Was he in the original? I can't remember.
I don't know.
Anyway, this whole birth scene is really traumatic, and it's really good until the pod starts cracking. You think, oh my God, what's going to be in it? And then there's a really odd cut when they're just holding a baby boy.
They just sort of hold it up like this. It's like...
They're like, how are we going to do that? We can't put a baby inside the pods. I think that'd be quite traumatic for the child.
It's like, yeah.
So how are we going to do this? And it is... It's a bit of a limptic ending of the beginning.
Yeah, it's sort of like, we haven't got the technology to do this, we'll just cut around it, essentially,
but
isn't it?
Everything around that, I think, is really good. Mm. Like, I was like, oh, really freaked out. The pod thing's really, like, the belly starts moving, the cocoon thing's really freaky. Everyone's really into it. I thought, oh, God, I wonder if the whole film's going to be like this. The disappointing part is the next half an hour isn't like this.
No, it's quite boring, isn't it? And,
well, they do a lot of explaining that his growth acceleration, and they try and link it to the first film. So we always have those video files that he keeps finding of his dad and stuff like that. But it doesn't really get going until the change. But you find out that he's been...
he's been Truman Showed, essentially.
Truman Showed, pretty much, in the lab.
Yeah.
And that they're lying to him and saying, yes, we could fix you at some point, and these are your drugs. But really, the bad... company want him to turn into the fly.
Yes.
Can you explain why, Rich?
Because
they're trying to work teleportation, right?
Well, no. Which I think... No, they've gone past that now. So now Bartok is interested in the next stage of human evolution, essentially. So that's what he's trying to do with the fly, is that he doesn't want the teleportation device to work. Martin's trying to get the teleportation device to work. But Bartok wants Martin to develop into the Fly so he can essentially create super serum. You know, he wants a Captain America style, give everyone superpowers kind of, or everyone who can afford it.
Flies.
No, he doesn't want to turn them into flies, but he wants to be able to like harness it essentially so that he can give people superpowers without all the downsidey stuff. That's his motivation essentially.
That's his evil plan.
Yeah. Super serum, that's his plan.
Okay, because the teleportation thing, because I've been wanting teleportation for a long time. It would help me a lot to get around to work and stuff.
Yeah.
Now I don't. No. I don't think, just in case.
No.
I should have remembered that from the first film and what happened to Jeff. But I really like teleportation. But if it does that to you, then no, thank you. There's a horrible scene when a dog gets teleported and turns into a mixture.
And that's sort of the turning point, isn't it? As the dog gets teleported, like it's Martin's dog, isn't it? And like that he loves. And the dog gets teleported and turned into this mutant thing. And they tell Martin the dog has been, they put the dog down because obviously it was so like mutated and
mutated.
Miserable. And then he discovers they haven't put it down. They've been keeping it in like a Sarlacc pit.
Yeah, good description.
So that's kind of when he goes, oh, actually, maybe this Dr. Bartok guy isn't a nice, genuine guy. Maybe he is the baddie.
That's true.
It's a useful device. Useful plot device, I would say.
I think the plot's pretty good, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
I thought this is going to be really, really rubbish when I first started to watch it. I was also worried because I was scared of the first one and haven't returned to that for mental reasons. And I was like, okay, we'll watch The Fly 2. We'll see what it's like. And there's some bits at the end when face melting is going along, which again is quite good.
Yeah,
looks all right. I think Eric Stoltz is plays Martin.
He's no Jeff Goldblum.
He's no Jeff Goldblum. Bless him. Is this around the time he lost Back to the Future?
Well, no, it's after Back to the Future, isn't it? Because Back to the Future was 85, and this is 89.
That poor boy. Then,
yeah, his career descent is sharp.
So like Richie was saying earlier, that when he's a fully adult Martin, he's actually still, 8 years old or even
five,
less than that?
No,
he's
5 years old.
5 years old, but he's also a genius.
Yeah, so he's both mentally and physically developed. So he's not like a child in a man's body. He's still naive, like very naive, because he's only 5 years old and he's never been out of this room, essentially. So he's still very naive, but he's not physically or mentally a child, I would say. Still really creepy that he has sex in this movie.
He does find himself a love interest, another woman. What's her name?
Her name is...
Daphne Zuga.
Sorry, I thought it meant character name. I think it's Beth, isn't it?
Beth is the name, yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where did you recognize that actress from? Did you recognize her from anything?
I did not recognize her from anything.
For a while, I was like, I know that face. I know her.
Right.
And it took me a while to pin it. But she's in Spaceballs. She plays the Princess Leia knockoff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see it now. Yeah.
Spaceballs was before this.
Oh, okay.
I was like, oh, her career. Have an interesting career. She's still working now, so that's good for her.
Good, yeah.
The sex scene with the five-year-old man child, it's a bit big.
It's a bit like... Yeah, but also, she's not surprised when she finds out that he is 5 years old and doesn't seem to be like, oh, my God, what have I done?
No, she's...
She's like,
I feel like Martin should have told her at that point.
Yeah,
that's
what I'm thinking is that does she know he's only 5 years old? Like... Because she does, she's not surprised when it's mentioned.
No, because he has been brought up in a lab for, I'd about to say all his life, but it is like four years.
Yeah, yeah.
And then eventually the bad guy goes, hey, we've got you a nice flat and you can work at the
flat is still like on the premises and is...
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. It's still like on the campus and he's...
Videoed.
Yeah, he's like CCTV'd all the time without him knowing.
By the evil security guard.
Yeah, I mean, Gary Chalk is so evil. I don't know what his character name is, but he's like, Gary Chalk has been in loads of stuff, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't recognise his face.
Oh, didn't you?
No.
He's been in lots of different things. You'd recognise, it's his voice, I think, more than anything. I'm sure he's in Transformers. He's voices. I knew it would be Transformers. But he's in like, what else is he in? I've definitely seen him in lots of things, and I'm sure he's done voices on like Ninjago and stuff like that. And
Ninjago.
Oh, my son loves Ninjago.
Like, I know. All kids stuff then. Is that what you were saying?
No, more voice actor. But I think isn't he in the Fargo TV series? He's been in lots of like small roles in B movies. Like he's in I can't remember. It's gone.
I've clicked on his name now.
But yeah, he's in lots of stuff. Pretty much.
He's in Freddy vs. Jason as Sheriff Williams.
Okay.
He is in Beast Wars : Transformers as Optimus Primal.
Yes, that's probably where I know the name from. Then.
He's in 8 Below.
What's 8 Below? I don't think I've seen that one.
It's got Paul Walker in it with the Huskies.
Oh, right, okay.
You're right, he's in Ninjago as well. Rich.
Look at that, hey?
Incredible scene. Incredible scene.
I've known him by the name rather than his face because I know him from voice acting, but yeah.
He was in the Predator as a postal worker recently. But yeah, it's a lot of kids' voice stuff. Yeah. You're right. Absolutely. Oh, wow, yeah. He's worked a lot. And he plays Scooby, Scorba?
I didn't catch what his name was called. Just evil security guard, essentially.
Like, I don't know why he hates everyone so much.
Well, everyone seems to hate Martin.
Yeah.
Like, the doctors all hate him. Like, even when he's a little boy, they're really mean to him. Like,
is that because they know he's gonna turn into his this?
Well,
offspring
I don't
of the,
know.
This
is it that,
gonna,
or is
they
it
know
that,
he's gonna
like,
turn into a fly thing?
Is it that you can't be nice to a subject you're essentially experimenting on? You've got to detach yourself from that. But they're also,
let's be honest,
horrible to him.
When he is a kid, he is a little shit because he knows he's smarter than everyone.
But he's trapped in a lab. Of course he is. Like, I just want to. My overriding feeling for the first like half an hour is like, God, can someone just look after this kid, please? Like, no wonder he's going to turn out psychologically damaged.
Oh yeah,
fucking hell. What happens with his aging? Would he carry on aging? Because he seems to be like, you know, grown up Eric Stoltz for quite a long time. I don't know how that works.
I think once he turns into the fly thing, that's it. He's okay. The fly thing.
Right.
And when he starts turning into the fly thing, that's when I was back in. I was like, oh, here we go. Yeah. They go and visit the guy from the first film.
Yes.
Who Jeff Goldblum...
melts his hand and foot
melts
off.
His hand, yeah. And I thought that was a nice like legacy sequel kind of touch.
Mm.
I don't believe that guy played a very good drunk.
No.
wasn't
right.
quite convincing. But he did drop some nice bits about the previous film, and he was very useful for plotting and what was going to happen next.
Oh yeah, he did some decent exposition, didn't he?
Absolutely. Like,
yeah, that's true.
So the only way Martin can save himself is by going into the pods and taking someone with him. So he has to sacrifice someone else, and he's not willing to do that, which is nice of him. But at that point, if you're turning into a fly, you probably should say, put a shotgun to my head and kill me then.
Yes, yeah.
But then, obviously, the fly genes kick in and he's like, oh, I'm coming to the next step of evolution kind of thing. And then he kind of camps that up for a little bit.
Yeah, and he turns into a cocoon from the feet up.
It's all very twisted and freaky. And when he takes his eyeball out, I can see you clearly now. Or whatever he says.
I wasn't sure if it's his whole... Is it his eyeball or is it his eyelid or like...
It's his eyeball because then underneath he had a
fly eye.
A fly eye.
Yeah.
And then he goes into a full cocoon. And this is where I was like, you would put that cocoon under like supervision, like in some kind of special room, loads of people watching it, cameras, security.
Nope.
No,
just one doctor with a syringe.
How long we got? Yeah. A week, I would say. No, you've got
about an hour.
I thought, okay, cool. Got a bit of time. And then all it cracks open, obviously, and the big prosthetic-y thing comes out. which was good. I thought
quite
was all right.
Kind of alien-ish, wasn't it? Like
alien-ish. The only bit which makes me laugh is when he spurts the goo out of his mouth, but you can cheerily tell it's coming out from a little tube.
That's true, yeah. There are.
It looks like it's being blown from a straw, and it's not very
scary. But do you know what?
Scary.
Better than Dr. Smith in the... What do you call it? Lost in Space.
Absolutely.
Looks a lot better than that. Like,
it does.
These visual effects stand up.
I was weirdly enjoying it, Rich.
Me too. This film. I was really surprised. I was like, there's some fun to be had here.
Do you think that's because we weren't expecting much? We're like, oh, it's a sequel we've never heard of.
I genuinely expected it to be awful and to be a struggle to get through. But, you know, it's quite slow paced in the middle. But the first...
Yeah, it's a strong beginning and a strong ending.
Yeah, the beginning, the last sort of 20 minutes, really quite fun. Like, yeah. You know.
Schlocky kind of 80s...
B-movie stuff.
B-movie horror stuff.
I mean, it's not amazing, don't get me wrong, but...
No.
Decently plotted and, you know, zips along. The ending was almost too quick.
Fair thing. I thought, yeah, because they didn't really mention what happens to Martin after he... So basically he takes the bad guy, Bartok, into the pods with it and Martin comes out as a normal human being and all the bad...
I mean, sort of. He sort of comes out as a normal human being inside of Bartok in some
way. It's a
bit
weird.
They're sort of linked together and Bartok's like a mutant-y thing like the dog.
Good ending.
Yeah, there. And then Martin kind of crawls out the back of him.
But Martin should definitely still be taken into by police because he's definitely killed
multiple
people at that point.
Yeah.
There's no way he can get away with it. Be like,
doesn't really say what happens to Martin, though, does it?
You're okay now, Martin. You're free.
You're
a real boy.
Also, why does he go back to Eric Stoltz, Martin? Why not, like, child Martin? Like, I don't know, it's...
Yeah, you're right. It should have done a little bit more with that.
Yeah. I don't know.
No, because they couldn't go back to the child because they need the romantic kiss at the end.
True.
He's all gooed up and she's like, I love a bit of that.
Yeah, I can't believe she kisses him when he's essentially covered in mucus.
And then the Bartok is out with this big Maccasey thing, which was quite freaky.
Yeah,
and
I mean, he's basically like the dog earlier on. Like, basically, it's like he'd been turned inside out. And
then they put him,
and
in,
then
the,
they put him
the
in the Sarlacc pit. Yeah, like the dog. And that's the ending of him, like,
pretty dark ending
out into
that.
The Sarlacc pit.
Yeah,
yeah,
I was like, oh, I mean, he probably deserved that. He was a very bad man.
He was, but I also felt like, oh, God, just kill him. Why are you keeping him?
Yeah. That...
Yeah.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, I'm going to put this in the same kind of camp as, like, weirdly, as Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 and Psycho 2.
Yeah.
Me being pleasantly surprised of these sequels that no one asked for and didn't know existed.
It's not good.
No.
It's not good, but it's also not bad. Like, it's, you know, The Fly is really... what makes The Fly great is Jeff Goldblum's performance, and Eric Stoltz does not go anywhere close to that. So it's missing that kind of bit of magic.
I also think they're missing the David Cronenberg.
Bit of weirdness. Definitely. That's true. Yeah. It's definitely it's very much a photocopy of the first one.
Paint by numbers.
Yeah. Slightly less quality. But
it doesn't feel as special and as weird and wonderful.
But having said that, it's fun though, right? It is kind of...
I was pleasantly surprised about
too.
The whole thing. Like, I did not expect the beginning to be that freaky and weird.
No.
And I think... everyone does okay with what they have kind of thing. And then you are waiting for the change. You are waiting for what's going to come next.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically...
a lot of the film.
The middle of the film, where it's like Eric Stoltz and whoever Beth is overacting. Like, being like really dramatic about nothing. Like, that's kind of... you're like, oh, yeah, could do without this.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Do you quickly want to know where it came on there? 1989, which was a brilliant year for cinema.
Go on then.
Brilliant year of cinema because it had Batman, Indiana Jones, Lethal Weapon 2, Back to the Future 2, Ghostbusters 2, Driving Miss Daisy won Oscars, so we can't forget about that. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. These are all brilliant films. Uncle Buck was this year as well, and that's a brilliant film. When Harry Met Sally. Right, so it came We're not quite sure the budget of this, are we, Rich? We think it's around 15 million.
Yeah, well, the first one was about 15 million. I imagine this would be similar, if not a bit lower.
It came at the 54th most highest grossing film of the year.
That's pretty good, I'd say, for this kind of movie.
I mean, worldwide, it took about 38 million, apparently, which is, you know...
It's all right.
All right.
For a B-movie like this, yeah, I think that's okay.
It's a very crowded year. I was just seeing how many sequels are above it. Indiana Jones, Last Crusade, Lethal Weapon 2, Back to the Future 2, Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, none of them in February.
Christmas Vacation, Star Trek 5, The Final Frontier, I think. Karate Kid Part 3.
Oh.
Nightmare on Elm Street, The Dream Child, which I can't remember if that's the second or fourth one. It's not the third one.
It's not the third one, no. I think it's the I don't know.
It's a lot. It's a good year for a film. And I don't know if that is a good amount of money in 1989. I mean, the highest grossing film was Batman with 401 million. But then second to that was Indiana Jones The Last Crusade, which just made under 200 million. So it's not awful.
No. No, you know? I think it did all right. Yeah, I'd say, you know, for what it is.
I'm surprised it didn't do more, as in they didn't go further with The Fly. Like, I'm surprised there was never a Fly 3. There wasn't a Fly 3, was there, Rich?
I don't think so. Well, I mean, I didn't know there was a Fly 2, to be honest.
No, and I'm surprised they've never remade The Fly, but I think that's maybe because David Cronenberg did the original. And you can't...
Yeah.
It's kind of, like, perfect. Do you want to know the... Should we do the Rotten Tomato games? We'll do the first and second one.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. I don't think there ever was a 3, by the way.
No, they didn't really leave it open, I guess, because at the end of the first Fly, you found out she was pregnant, so there's somewhere to go with it.
Mm.
And this one, I think the story is kind of put to end. But, you know, 90s and 2000s remakes, there was no stopping it. Okay, so The Fly in 1986, critic score on Rotten Tomato, what do you reckon?
The original?
Yeah, we'll do the original.
Okay, still quite a B-movie, probably still not critic fodder. But possibly people that are quite surprised at how good it is. It's like David Cronenberg. I'm going to go with 72.
93%.
93! Wow! Mm. Wow.
Audience score?
Okay. Audience score. I was going to say audience score in the 80s because I thought that was kind of the audience would be a step up from the critics.
I don't know if Rotten Tomato would take... Because it would be people voting for it now, because Rotten Tomatoes only been a thing since, what, 2000?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of critic score, then they look back into old reviews and stuff. I'm not sure how
there
many
There's only reviews. 75 reviews.
So. Yeah, so some of those must be old ones, though. Must have gone back into the
I
archives.
Hope so.
I'm going to go with... you've made me think now that the audience score might be lower because it's judging on modern standards.
Mm.
I'm still sticking with reasonably high, though. I'm still going with 74.
83%.
Oh, you put me off. I was going to go for 83.
I love it. The slogan on the Fly poster was, be afraid, be very afraid.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Such a good slogan.
It's really scary, the first one. I don't think the second one is as scary, but maybe that's because I'm an adult now and it wouldn't.
No. I also think it's just not as scary. We are adults now, but also it just isn't as menacing as the first one.
Yeah. The Fly 2, you know, this was an hour and 45 minutes, which was probably, let's be honest, 15 minutes, maybe too long.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, you cut 15 minutes out of the middle.
Yep. Only 18 reviews for this. So try and put that in. But
yeah, and I definitely won't be anywhere near the first one. 61.
33%.
33. God, that's lower than I thought. Okay. Maybe audience would be higher.
A worthless sequel to a very good film.
Oh, I wouldn't say worthless.
The less said about The Fly 2 or Son of Blundellfry, the better.
Hmm.
Just the horrible fate of the Golden Retriever is guaranteed to make dog lovers cringe. But beyond that, it's hard to invest much emotion in the strung-up inducing follow-up.
Yeah,
also,
I mean,
but the film is entertaining, surprisingly agile and concise, but clearly inconsiderate in a time and place now. I don't know. That's from four reviews in Spanish.
What I would say is that it's whilst it you know, there is some fun to be had, it's clearly not as well directed and not as well written as the first one, and definitely not as well acted.
I think they're trying to do different themes. Like, yeah. The first one's so mentally torturous, like, if that makes sense, like, it really gets in your brain, like, what if?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's horrible. And they really go into that body horror, like, his change is such a big thing in the first
film. Yeah, and they don't dwell on that as much in this one.
On the first film, like, the changes that mentally and physically that Jeff Goldblum's going through is brilliantly done in the first film. And in this film, they barely touch on the mental side. It's like the bit in the hotel is like his bit when he's changing.
Yeah.
And the change physically, I mean, there's one bit when he's poking his arm and some goo's coming out. And that's about it.
That's about it. Yeah, that's true.
Until his face starts, you know, lumpity bumpity. But then there's the cocoon happens and you're rushed to the fly bit when he's a fully fledged fly.
True.
Anyway.
So the audience score.
Audience score. 10,000 plus ratings.
56.
So 24%.
Whoa! Ouch. Okay.
I think that's a little bit unfair.
Maybe harsh.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't put it. Where would you, what would you put it? Where would you put it?
I probably wouldn't give it a 3 stars.
No.
So I would probably be one of those people where it doesn't get a positive review. I'd probably give it a 2 to 2.5, I guess.
And that's us being positive.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is being positive. It's not it doesn't need to exist, essentially.
For a film that's 35 years old, I don't think it's awful.
No, and I think that's because the visual effects still work.
The bit when the guy's face is coming apart and he's ripping his skin off, I thought was tremendous at that point.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I think, like you said, you mentioned Indiana Jones, we've had face melting. That's a...
Oh, yeah.
That's a thing, but... You know, there's nothing. I don't think
that's the same year.
I don't think the visual effects are. Well, no, it's
Last Crusade is the same year.
Yeah, but Last Crusade isn't when they do the face melting, is it?
Good point. Yeah, you're right.
That's Temple of Raiders, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's a lot earlier than this. It's like 80.
You're right. Shut up, Dave.
So I don't think there's anything like surprising in the visual effects. There's not anyone's going like, "Oh my god, I've never seen that before."
There's a bit when the guy gets squirted on his hand with the same stuff that's melted someone's face.
Yeah.
And his hand is like, he's like, oof.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, ow. Really, in theory, his hand should have been like off.
Yeah, yeah. True.
And I thought that's a bit of a plot.
Yeah, true. I mean, there's lots of dodgy plot defects, but, you know, I think.
But overall,
I had fun with it.
Would you recommend it to people? It is there to be found on the internet, we should say.
Yes, yeah. You have trouble trying to stream it. You can't find that on many streaming sites and stuff, but you can find it if you look hard enough. I don't know. I mean, if you're trying, you know, if you're... It's nothing really here to recommend particularly, but
go watch the
if you do
one,
stumble you... across it, you won't hate it. You know, like...
Yeah.
There is some fun to be had. We've watched far worse sequels.
If you haven't watched The Fly, go watch The Fly.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
And if you really enjoy The Fly, probably stick The Fly.
I would watch this over Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom.
Yes.
I had more fun watching this than I did watching that. So, you know, that's where it sits. But yeah, I mean, in terms of, yeah, I wouldn't highly recommend it, but I also wouldn't tell people to never watch it.
So is this a celebration anniversary special or? I mean, go.
It's a thing. It's a thing that's there.
Someone made a thing. If you're a completist.
There are going to be people out there who love it, I reckon.
There's going to be people out there that don't know if it existed.
Yeah. So most people won't know it existed. But there will also be people out there who absolutely love it, I should think. It's that kind of movie.
Incredible. I was pleasantly surprised. And it's a thing that's now in my movie database that I've watched.
Yeah.
So,
are we going to do unequal sequel and marks out of 7s sort of stuff?
We can. Or? We can do if we want.
I mean, it's...
Like, it's a 1.52, isn't it, if we're at 7?
I said it was 2.5 out of 5. So,
in
that case, it's sort of like a 3 out of 7.
Okay, that sounds about positive. Let's go with that.
Yeah, it's not a positive review. It's less than half. But, you know... it's an unequal sequel, of course, because it's not as good as the first one.
The first one is a brilliant, brilliant film. Yeah. One day I'll be brave enough to go back to. Not yet.
No.
Not yet. Because Jeff Loeb is so fucking creepy in that film. And you're right,
Eric Stoltz just isn't there, is he?
Isn't. Not on the same kind of level. But he's playing a very different character. But he doesn't really play it like a child, like maybe he should do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's down to directing more than anything, though, isn't it?
35 years. Congratulations to The Fly 2. You've done it.
Happy 35th birthday.
Happy 35th birthday. See you at the 40th. Rich, sit us out.
Do you think we'll be around in 35 years?
No.
People would be wishing us happy 35th unequal sequel. Maybe we'll hand over to some young whippersnappers by then.
It's a good idea.
But in 35 years' time, you'll still be able to go back and listen to our previous episodes on whichever your pod player of choice is. If we're even listening to podcasts, who knows? You know, go back, have a listen. You can do all that now. Go back and listen to our interview episodes. They are brilliant. There's loads more reviews. You won't find one that goes back as far as 35 years, but there are lots of anniversary specials if this is your thing. Make sure you hit the auto download button and the subscribe button. We'll drop into your pod player of choice every single week. Get yourself over to anotherslice.com/unequalsequel. Where you can join our subscription service. It's only $2.99 a month, and you get essentially three extra podcasts for your money. One of them will include something that we're going to do around a special end to the Twilight series.
Maybe.
We don't know if it's going to work or not yet, so we'll see how that goes. But maybe you'll be able to hear something special. Or yeah. Terrible, who knows? But yeah, it's worth the $2.99 just to hear what comes of that experiment. Essentially, if $2.99 a month is not something you can afford at the moment, and that's perfectly fine. Get yourselves onto the social medias. We are at Unequal Sequel on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and Blue Sky and YouTube. Get on there. Let us know what you thought of The Fly 2, and we'll read out all your comments in our end of month roundup at the end of February. And yeah, it would just be nice to hear from you, really. Please tell your friends about the podcast, and we'll be back with Series 6 very soon. Very soon.
Let's
not
say
gonna
very
give you
soon.
An exact date because we don't know yet, but we have started recording.
Which is very exciting. February seems to be a weird month for sequels, so we're going to find some things to do. We do know that Madam Web is coming out at some point, so happy Valentine's Day to my wife, probably, if that's come out at the same point. What are we doing tonight, love? Oh, we're going to see Madam Web. Brilliant.
Are we?
I've got thank you for listening. Nothing else to say, so it's a bye-bye from me. Bye-bye. It is a bye-bye from him.
Bye!
See you on the next one. Sequel to this one. Have a great week. Bye.
I wonder if Madam Web would be the perfect villain for The Fly.
Ooh, what a link.